You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Anyone else remember the great self-driving cars will be used by sex workers to turn tricks panic of 2018? Self-driving cars will be for sex, scientists say, read the headline at Fast Company. Self-driving cars could function as rolling bordellos, read the headline at The Telegraph. Self-driving vehicles will turn cars into brothels on wheels, read the headline at The New York Post. NBC News quoted the author of the study that led to all those panicky headlines, Scott Cohen at the University of Surrey. The study was published in the Annals of Tourism Research. Quoting Scott Cohen here, it is quite likely that autonomous vehicles will lead to prostitution, whether legal or illegal, taking place in moving autonomous vehicles in the future, close quote. The study's authors noted that 60% of Americans have already had sex in a car, usually, but not always, a parked car. But in the future, in the very spooky future, you won't have to find a dark place to park your car and hope the cops don't come along. When cars can drive themselves, you can safely have sex in your moving car, and more people will be fucking in cars. It makes sense. And some of that sex, like some of the sex that goes on right now in hotel rooms and suburban homes and parked cars, some of that sex will be paid sex. How much of it? No one can say. Maybe all of it. Teslas aren't cheap. So anyway, people looked at self-driving cars a few years ago and thought, the real problem with these things isn't how they run people over, just like regular cars do now. Pedestrian deaths in the U.S. up 21% since 2019. Biggest increase in pedestrian deaths since the 1970s. And the real problem with these self-driving cars isn't more cars clogging streets or our failure to build mass transit systems in walkable cities that make it possible for people to not need cars in the first place. And the real problem isn't another megalomaniacal billionaire hosting SNL. No, the real problem with these self-driving cars is that someone somewhere might turn a trick in one of those things. And the chance that sex workers might get their sex work cooties all over the concept of driverless cars, well, that is something we need to think about and panic about and then do something about because maybe if we give it some more thought, we'll finally come up with a way to stop people from buying and selling sex. Literally nothing we've tried over the last 5,000 years has worked. Arrest, prosecution, imprisonment, even exile, mutilation, torture, execution. None of that worked. Maybe traffic tickets will do the, trick. A quick digression. We should be moving toward the full decriminalization of sex work in cars and other places. As Human Rights Watch said when they came out for decriminalizing sex work a few years ago, government should not be telling consenting adults who they can have sex with and on what terms. And criminalization, again, quoting from Human Rights Watch, makes sex workers more vulnerable to violence, including rape, assault, and murder by attackers who see sex workers as easy targets because they are stigmatized and unlikely to receive help from the police. Well, our paranoia about sex work and where it might happen next took a very Midwestern turn recently. Ice fishing is banned in Hudson, Ohio. And the city council there in Hudson is thinking about opening Hudson Spring Lake to ice fishers. Ice fishers are people whose idea of fun is to walk out into the middle of a frozen lake, cut a hole in the ice, and then sit down on the ice and do some fishing. Fishing, which isn't even fun when the weather is nice. Allowing ice fishers to have their idea of fun on Hudson Spring Lake while it's still freezing over could lead to trouble. I say trouble. There could be trouble right here in Hudson City. Trouble with a capital T that rhymes with P that stands for prostitution? Yeah. Hudson Mayor Craig Schubert had a warning for the city council when they were deliberating about whether or not to open Hudson Spring Lake to ice fishers because there could be unintended consequences of legalizing ice fishing. You see, some people who ice fish like to build little ice huts over their little ice holes. And if the unsightly nature of those makeshift ice huts, ice shanties, wasn't bad enough, the mayor said, and I'm quoting, that leads to another problem, prostitution. And now you've got the police chief and the police department involved. You know, driverless cars, I can see. People have sex in cars now. Driverless cars, yeah, people are going to fuck in those things. And some people are going to get paid for it. But an ice fishing shack in the middle of a frozen lake, sitting on a wood pallet, which is sitting on the ice while the wind howls outside the plastic sheeting, sounds like an awkward place to turn a trick. Awkward like a car. For instance, awkward place to have sex, a car, for love or money, whether that car is self-driven or operated by a human being. It's pretty much why people stop having sex in cars as soon as they have their own apartments. That's 60% of Americans cited in that study who've had sex in cars. I haven't seen the data, but I'm guessing most were teenagers or very young adults when they had sex in cars. So yeah, I don't think people are going to be clamoring to have sex, paid or otherwise, in ice fishing huts. Look, I believe that human beings are infinitely perverse. Whatever it is, however it feels, whatever it's made of, someone somewhere is jacking off about it right now. I believe in Rule 34, which is, if it exists or can be imagined, there is internet porn of it. Ice huts exist, and ice huts obviously excite the imagination of the mayor of Hudson, Ohio, but there's no internet porn of it. No ice hut porn I could find online. None. And yes, this is a dare. If you can find some ice hut porn online, even just some ice fishing porn, no hut required, send it to me, because I would love to be proved wrong. And if there isn't any out there, someone is going to have to make some. It's the only way we can save Rule 34. All right, a little update before we get to the show. Craig Schubert, mayor of Hudson, Ohio, no longer mayor of Hudson, Ohio. The Republican resigned his office after other Republicans on the Hudson City Council accused him of embarrassing the town of Hudson after his comments about prostitution and ice fishing huts went viral and demanded he step down. So now we know what it takes for a Republican office holder to have to resign in shame. Supporting an insurrection? Not a problem. Blowing a hole in Rule 34? You gotta go. All right, coming up on today's show, on this week's Micro Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Micro and Magnum, Shan Boudram, host of Lovers and Friends podcast, joins me. We talked about mismatched libidos and getting touched out when you have a kid, love bombing and what that means, and black girl magic. Some of my conversation with Shan is on the Micro. All of my conversation with Shan is on the Magnum Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savage.love. All right, let's get to the calls. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Foria. Foria crafts 100% all-natural sexual wellness products so you can experience deeper intimacy and transcendent moments of sexual pleasure solo or with your partner or partners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage. That's foriawellness.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Allform, premium customizable sofas and chairs shipped right to your door. For 20% off your perfect sofa, go to allform.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by DoorDash, the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOVECAST.
Hey, Dan. So we just hired a new person, and it appears as if they are in some sort of sexual relationship in which their partner is a master, I think. I don't know. They haven't explicitly said, but they need to ask for permission from their partner for everything, including coming into the office and going on a mandatory company retreat. And tonight we had a all-employee dinner in which their partner fed them the entire time in front of everyone. And I was kind of uncomfortable with it, and it was just kind of bizarre in a work setting, but now I feel like I'm being sex negative, and I'm just wondering, should this be allowed in public? Like, should people be allowed to be fed by their partner at a work setting? Am I just being not accepting? I just don't really know how to address it. And it's coming into work because they are saying that they can't come to a mandatory retreat because they have to ask their partner. And then I feel like it's kind of abusive, but I don't want to intrude and I just need some help.
When Erica Less joined us for the last SAC lunch, one of the Magnum subs who got to ask a question of me and Erica was a kinky person who was a little annoyed, upset that when they tried to share some of what their DS sex life and relationships involved with their sister was kind of squicked out by this. And I feel very conflicted because, you know, I don't want to say to kinky people, you can't be out about your kinks because it's going to make some people uncomfortable, because the same shit was said to me about being gay when I was 15 years old and 16 years old and 17 years old, and is still said to me by some people about being gay, that your gayness makes some people uncomfortable, religious people uncomfortable. That's why we're getting these don't say gay bills in Florida and Tennessee. And so you should have to shut the fuck up. And obviously, I don't think I should have to shut the fuck up about being gay. But here's the thing. When I tell people I'm gay, when I told my mother I was gay, and this is what I said to the caller or the Magnum sub during the SAC lunch Zoom call. When I told my mom I was gay, I gave her kind of, you know, it was the bare outline. Like, I'm gay. I like to have sex with boys. I like to be with boys. I'm attracted to other men. And I didn't go into exactly what I was doing with those other men. Exactly, you know, I didn't tell my mom whether I was a top or a bottom. I didn't need to tell her that. I didn't tell my mom that the first time I slept with a guy, I discovered I had no gag reflex, and that was making me a popular dude at the gay bars I'd started to frequent as a teenager. She didn't need to know that at that granular level, but she did need to know, if I was going to live my life and be who I am, that I was gay. Beyond that, I ran my mother on a need-to-know basis, and my mother did not need to know that I had no gag reflex. Seems to me the same standard kind of applies to coworkers. You know, you're out as gay at work, and your coworkers know you're gay, and they can make certain informed assumptions about what you might like if you're gay. You might like sucking men's dicks. You might like getting your dick sucked by other men. You might like anal. But beyond that, your coworkers, like your siblings, don't need to know. And I think that is a model that should be adopted and embraced by people into DS relationships. That's not something you should be ashamed of, enjoying that kind of dynamic in your relationship. Indeed, a lot of religious people enjoy that kind of dynamic, a DS dynamic in their relationships, and they're really public about that wife joyfully submits to the husband head of household role play game that they engage in for Jesus. And it seems to me that people who are into DS sex should be able to be just as kind of matter of fact about it as the gays are matter of fact about being gay, some of whom are kinky, and the religious people who are into DS stuff but rationalize it as what Jesus wants are open about their DS shit, that people into DS dynamics should be able to be kind of matter of fact about that. But still, you can be matter of fact about it. Mom, I'm gay. Beyond that, you don't need to know. You know, you can be matter of fact about having a kind of DS relationship without burdening people with too much information, without giving them details they didn't need to know about. If your coworker needs their master's permission to leave the house in the morning and come to work, presumably they're going to get that permission every day since they show up and work every day. They didn't need to tell you about that. You didn't need to know. If they need their master's permission to come to a mandatory retreat, they can go get their master's permission and they don't need to tell you about that, and they probably shouldn't have told you about that. And showing up at a dinner and engaging in DS play, the master feeding the submissive the way they did, I don't think that's right. The submissive showing up and having a chain locked around their neck, which is practically a fashion accessory these days. You can get those kinds of dom sub chain collars with little locks now from Tiffany's. I don't think that's a big deal. That's like the DS equivalent of seeing somebody's engagement ring. Like, all right, they're engaged. They're straight, or they're gay and they're engaged and they're in love and they're probably having lots of whatever kind of sex that they enjoy. You see that chain on somebody's neck and you're like, all right, they have kind of a DS thing going, good for them. But yeah, that person having to kneel beside their partner at a public event that's not a kink event or that's not a gay bar or a fetishy club where people sometimes get their kink on publicly, I don't think that's okay. I really don't. I think that's failing to run coworkers on the need to know basis that we all should run our siblings and family members on. They should know who we are. We can give them the bare outline. But beyond that, getting into specifics, much less engaging in a kind of sex play in front of other people, that's not fair. It's kind of a consent violation. And I don't support it. And I think that you have a right to go to this employee and say, whatever you guys are doing, and the fact that you're in a DS relationship, that is fine. That is common. A lot of people are interested in DS relationships. If you need your master's permission to come to work, great. Go get your master's permission to come to work. Your coworkers don't need to know that you had to get your master's permission to come to work any more than you need to know that your supervisor, one of your fellow coworkers, got a facial this morning before coming to work.
My daughter told me to call in here. Ever since my wife Barb died, I've been having trouble with the, well, let me back up here. Well, I'll tell you, back in the day, ever since the 70s, me and my wife Barb, you know, we always been cranking the hog on them old big block Chevys, I tell you, being on BBCs, right? And, well, ever since Barb died, I just ain't been able to crank the hog on them old BBCs like I used to, I reckon. I tell you what, man, there ain't nothing like getting the old BBC revved up, I tell you what. But, you know, it just ain't the same without Barb, you know. She used to really take the time back there, and, you know, ever since she's gone, I ain't been able to get my crankshaft to, rev on up, man. I tell you what. I don't know if there's any other older fellas out here with a similar problem, but I guess Jesus just had to lay her down, had to lay down on Barb there. But if anybody out there give me any advice, I need help cranking the hog on them old BBCs there. Anybody can help me with time and light. Been shooting in the dark here, as they say. I ain't got no time and light no more. They took that in the divorce. But, well, she's dead now, so there's no getting her back either. So it's my old time and light's seen brighter days. But go ahead and let me know what you can do. If you can give me any help reliving them old memories and cranking them hogs.
My sex advice spidey senses are tingling, and I think this might be a fake call. An attempt to get BBC on my podcast over and over again. I've never heard anyone use the initialism BBC to refer to big block Chevys, British Broadcasting Corporation, the Bangkok Bank of Commerce, the Bluegrass Brewing Company, and a certain somewhat fetishizing and dehumanizing reference to the penises of black men. Yeah, I've heard all that called BBC, but big block Chevys? Yeah, no. But on the off chance that this isn't a fake and you and your late wife Barb were cranking the hog on your Chevy back in the day and you are missing her and sad, I did want to respond and just say, I am sorry for your loss, and to then broaden out and make the point that one of the things we lose when our long-term partners pass away is physical intimacy and companionship. You know, if you're with somebody for decades, it may not be cranking the hog and rocking the Chevy the way this caller. And Barb, we're apparently still cranking hogs and rocking Chevys all those years, but touch, intimacy, closeness, all of those things are suddenly taken from you. And the absence of even that kind of casual intimacy, or, you know, if you're in your 60s, 70s, 80s and still fucking like crazy, you're buying Joan Price's books and having sex at your age, great, you're suddenly going to be missing that too. And that seems like something that we don't acknowledge at the end of a relationship when it's death that ends the relationship. And something there's not a lot of support for people who are suddenly missing that kind of touch, that kind of intimacy, that kind of connection. This is a place where I feel that a culture that celebrated sex work, that didn't persecute sex workers and drive them off the internet, but a culture that celebrated sex work, this is somewhere that sex workers could do a lot of good for people, provide comfort, provide the physical connection and touch that someone who's a widow or widower in their 60s, 70s, 80s may not have the energy to go out and find. So yeah, anyway, I was afraid to answer that question because I'm afraid it's a fake and someone just wants to hear BBC on my podcast. But there was something about the end of the call that made me start to think that this guy might be for real. And I wanted to err on the side of offering at least some support to this caller and some sympathy for their loss. And, you know, to grind that axe I've ground for years, that there's a lot of good sex workers could do for people. And there's a lot of good sex workers do for people now, but they do it under tremendous pressure, legal persecution, social stigma, and they don't deserve that persecution. They don't deserve to be driven off the internet, and they don't deserve the social stigma. So yeah, I'd like to live in a world where someone in this caller's condition, going through what this caller is going through now, had the option of meeting up, getting together with, forming a relationship with even, a kind, compassionate, perhaps older sex worker who can meet their needs, who can fill that gap, who can provide them with the intimacy it can be harder for older widowed people and their Chevys to find.
Hi, everyone. It's Nancy. Okay, don't tell Dan. But that last call gave me an idea. He doesn't listen to the show. He really doesn't. So he won't hear what I'm about to ask of you. People assume we get a lot of fake calls all the time, and we really don't, or at least I don't think we do. But for April Fool's Day, let's load Dan up with a ton of fake calls and see if he can tell. So will you please send in some fake questions? Make it interesting, keep it under 3 minutes, record it on your phone, and send it to voicemail at savagelovecast.com. Make sure you say fake at the beginning so I know to include it, and then we'll put together the weirdest show ever for April Fool's Day. And again, don't tell Dan.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Foria, makers of products for amazing sex, the kind of sex you want to have. Products including arousal oil, clean lube, bath salts, and suppositories. People are literally saying things like this about Foria's products. This is a quote. I had a 3-minute orgasm and then a 5-minute orgasm and felt like I was surfing in a perpetual wave pool of pleasure. And another quote, we use Awaken, and when she gets on top, we both come so hard that we see sounds and hear colors. And it doesn't hurt when GQ calls you the best sex product of the year, and Shape says you are the best invention since the vibrator. Now, this is a little personal, but Terry and I tried the suppository, and leave it to Foria to make suppositories sexy. They did it. I'm not sure what they put in there. I know there's CBD, at least, but they have some serious love potion energy. So yeah, you have my permission to try this. I fully endorse you to go ahead and treat yourself to more, deeper, fuller pleasure wherever you can find it as often as possible. And you can start with a bottle of Foria. Foria is offering a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off your first order by visiting foriawellness.com/savage or use the code SAVAGE at checkout. That's Foria wellness.com/savage for 20% off your first order I recommend trying their Awaken Arousal Oil and Sex Oil. You'll thank me later.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 36-year-old married gay guy. Because of work, my husband and I have been long distance, which is awful, but it's not what this question is about. So I'm seeing this other guy who seems very sexually repressed. We had sex twice. The first time, he barely touched me. He didn't go down on me. And when I went down on him, he asked if we could slow things down. I was obviously happy to oblige. I told him I wanted him to feel comfortable. He told me he was very comfortable. We didn't come. We just cuddled and slept, and that was very nice. The second time was a little more engaged. He did go down on me for like 5 seconds. We jerked each other off. We came, but I asked him what he was into sexually, and he told me he didn't know. And it broke my heart because he's 38 and he doesn't know what he likes to do in bed. He had an extremely repressive childhood. He was raised in a Christian family. When he was a teenager, his mom took him away to live in an evangelical community. He told me it was really abusive. He knew he liked guys from an early age, but to use his words, he was really fucked in the head. He managed to get away from his mom when he was 23. He told me he fucked the first guy when he was 28. He is not out to his family. He only started coming out to his friends last year. And you know, we live in an extremely progressive European city, so his friends have been nothing but supportive. He managed to overcome his religious upbringing in a lot of ways. So he parties, he drinks, he does recreational drugs, but when it comes to his sexuality, he's clearly conflicted. Usually, I would totally move away from someone who's this self-loathing, but I really like him, and I wish I could help. You know, I think about all the men that I had sex with and how they helped me feel better about myself. They helped me learn about my own sexuality. I thought about recommending that he watches porn. You talk a lot about how, you know, porn can help us figure out what we like to do in bed. But I'm sure he consumes porn, and I fear that actually part of his anxiety may come precisely from what he thinks he needs to perform, you know, because he watched it in porn. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts, Dan, on how I could help him. Or perhaps I shouldn't try to help him. You know, he told me ideally he would like to find a partner, and because I'm married, what I can offer is somewhat limited. But I really like him, and I wish, you know, I wish I could help.
He's had a decade. Not since he came out. You say he got away from his mom at 23, came out, sucked his first dick or had his first sexual encounter with a man at 28. Now he's 38 years old, lives in a big liberal progressive place where he drinks and uses drugs and parties and has a wide circle of friends who know who he is and accept him for who he is. If he hasn't figured this shit out yet, he's not going to figure it out for you. He may not want to figure it out. It's been a decade. I suspect that he may know what it is that he wants sexually, but he's afraid to say it, whatever it might be. Maybe what he wants sexually is really limited, and he fears rejection because his sexual repertoire or range is just so limited. You say that you went down on him briefly and he asked if you could slow things down. Slower than oral in a gay sexual encounter is stationary or putting it into reverse. Maybe he's just not that into oral or anal sex. You say that the second time you slept together and you just jacked off together, that went a little bit better after he had your dick in his mouth for a split second. Perhaps that's all he's interested in, all he's up for, all he's capable of. And maybe that has something to do with his upbringing and the damage done by his shitty evangelical family, parents, and community. Or maybe this is just who he is. Maybe he's on the asexuality spectrum and he is not that interested in most kinds of sexual activity and is only making himself minimally available to you sexually because he feels not joy at that connection, not desire for you, but that he needs to toss that out there to sustain your interest in him romantically. But if he can't articulate any of this himself, I'm just wildly speculating. If after being out and in a big liberal city with friends that you go drinking and partying with for a decade, if he hasn't managed to figure it out in a decade, he's not going to figure it out for you, for your dick. Be his friend. Stay in touch with him. Tell him why you're not interested in pursuing anything further, romantically or sexually. You can offer, if he just wants to lay with you and have body contact and talk and relax and think out loud about sex and desire, maybe you could make yourself available for that. But I would, if I were you, stop thinking of myself as dating this man, as someone, I would stop thinking of him as someone I'm seeing. You can hang out, you can be intimate, but you're going to have to accept that if, yeah, at 38 years old, he hasn't worked through any of this shit yet, he's not going to work through it for you in the next 3 months, 6 months, year, however long it is you're going to be separated from your husband and living in this city with him. It's almost spring, and that means spring cleaning. Spring cleaning can also mean spring throwing out. Take a look at that nasty old sofa you're sitting on. Maybe it's time for that to get sprung cleaned, spring cleaned right out of your house. I mean, are you really still sitting on that old thing? Upgrade to a sleek, comfy, cool sofa like I did with Allform. With Allform, you can customize a sofa using premium materials and at a fraction of the cost at traditional stores. You pick your fabric and it's spill, stain, and scratch resistant. You pick your sofa color, the color of the legs, the sofa size, and the shape to make sure it's perfect for you and perfect for your home and your butt. They have armchairs and love seats all the way up to an 8-seat sectional, so everyone in your polycule can sit down with you on your brand new sofa. And you can always start small and buy more seats later on if you want your Allform sofa to grow and change with you and your family and your polycule when you move and you grow and you change. Allform sofas are also delivered directly to your home with fast, free shipping. Allform takes just 3 to 7 days to arrive in the mail, and you can assemble it yourself in a few minutes. No tools needed. Or you can do what I did and have Nancy do it. She tells me that it was easy. We have an Allform love seat here at Lovecast HQ. It's a cool retro teal color and it fits perfectly in our studio and it looks great. And if getting a sofa without trying it in the store sounds a little risky, you don't need to worry. You get 100 days to decide if you want to keep it. That's more than 3 months. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up for free and give you a full refund. They even offer a forever warranty, literally forever. To find your perfect sofa, check out allform.com/savage. And Allform is offering 20% off all orders for my listeners at allform.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. Go to allform.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I'm not sure how to approach an ongoing issue with my partner who's out 3 years. Basically, it feels like a lot of the elements of our relationship are sliding downhill. For example, we had what I would consider a great sex life for almost the first year. We had sex many times a week, and he was really affectionate with me, and I thought we were basically on the same page with that sort of thing, which was great because I am a very physical person, and it is the number one way that I feel and express love. But after about the first year, there was a steady and noticeable decline, not like a peak and trough situation, but literally just a decline in any physical touch. We talked about it several times over the years, and at first he said that even if he didn't want to have penetrative sex, he'd still look after me in other ways so that I'd be satisfied. That lasted maybe a few months or so, and now it doesn't happen at all. And in terms of penetrative sex, I'd say maybe once every month or two, and that's usually after I've mentioned sex in some way, so it all feels pretty obligatory. The same sort of thing has happened with our communication as well. He doesn't really want to talk to me, and more I feel like my presence is generally kind of irrelevant. But every now and again, he'll have a really good day and do something really sweet. And for a while, I forget how uncertain I was before. I know he has stuff going on. He's got some things going on at work. He has sleeping problems. He's working through some mental health issues, and I'm really proud of him for that, and I want to be supportive. I just don't know how many times I can or I should be continually cutting down on my expectations and making adjustments. I feel like I've been consciously trying and training myself to be okay with less and less in order to match what he's comfortable with. But just when I think we've reached an understanding, there's another decline and I have to start all over. I don't want to feel like I'm giving up, but I also don't know how to keep working on something with someone who seems to want less and less and has less and less time and effort to give me and our relationship.
Oh, oh, it's time for a second opinion.
Joining me for this second opinion, Shan Boudram, the host of Lovers and Friends podcast, author of the best-selling The Game of Desire. She merges sexology and psychology as a certified intimacy educator. Think Dr. Ruth meets Rihanna. Hey, Shan, thank you so much for coming on my show.
You forgot a very big piece of my bio.
Oh my gosh.
Which long-term Dan Savage fangirl. Obsessed, incredibly excited to be here.
Well, thank you so much for coming on my show. I'm a new Shan fan. I've been listening to a whole bunch of your shows in anticipation of getting to talk with you. And I just think you're great. No one gets to come on Second Opinion if I don't think they give really great advice. So
amazing.
Welcome to my show. I'm just going to sum up my question for you after listening to this call. Why won't women give up?
I think that there's something beautiful about that. I mean, when we choose to love somebody, we choose to acknowledge somebody as being special above other people for usually no discernible reason. Our brain just says, I pick you and I choose you, and I'm choosing to provide resources, time, and energy towards you. And so we don't give up because that's the spirit of love.
Is it a trap, though? I mean, women are socialized to be the nurturers, to work on the relationship. And I hear all the time from women who are making a larger and larger investment in a relationship where their needs aren't getting met. And it's not just from women. I often hear from people whose partners are working through a mental health issue and aren't getting their needs met, that they feel like they can't prioritize their own needs or they're a monster if they leave. Mm-hmm. How do you get out of that trap?
I think that you get to a place where you decide that the best possible version of you is not possible with this configuration. And I think when you acknowledge that, you also acknowledge that in the other person, it probably is the exact same formula, right? Because when we're frustrated and constantly coming down on our partner, we're also minimizing maybe their potential for growth. And so I think you can get to that place where you say, I don't see a foreseeable road where the version of me that I want to become is possible with the person I'm currently with. And that, honestly, people come to the answer a lot sooner than they come to the decision to leave, which is unfortunate. But in this particular story, when I heard it, I immediately thought mental health issues. And I also immediately thought of monogamish, which is we were just talking about this back and forth before. This is one of the scenarios that I've heard you talk about before on the Savage Cast, in that when you get to a place where there's an incompatibility on one particular area. So if, for example, I loved theater and you didn't, I would have no problem having a theater partner. And then the rest of our intimacy needs we could have met, and I wouldn't be frustrated because you wouldn't come with me to a hobby that really lights up my life and lights my fire. And so when it comes to sexuality, is there not a possible configuration? Because I can honestly empathize with the other partner who must feel slightly exhausted, you know, from the constant bids for attention.
Yeah, the constant bids for attention. People have these hangups, though, like doing sex with somebody else isn't the same thing as going bowling with somebody else or going to the theater with somebody else. We attach so much importance to sex, but in this way that's very much in conflict. This is so important that you shouldn't do it with anybody else ever. Also, this is so unimportant, this sex stuff, that you shouldn't exit a relationship just because the sex isn't working. Sex is trivial and not important compared to love, intimacy, connection. I think the trap the caller might be in is this idea that people get in their heads that you can only love somebody when you stay, that you can't love and leave, that you can't love someone out of a relationship. You can only love someone in a relationship.
Yeah. And I believe that especially when you get to that point, when you acknowledge that the growth potential isn't there for the individuals, leaving is an act of love. And it is an act to say that I see a better version of you, that you can prioritize your wellness in ways that you can't with me because our just needs are completely conflicting. I just empathize this call too, because I'm also in a relationship where my love language is physical touch. My partner is not necessarily the most affectionate person with me. And to me, what I found made a massive difference is when I stopped constantly making bids and complaints about it. And through that, allowing my partner to feel like they weren't failing, because I think no one likes to do math if they feel like they're not good at math. Mm-hmm. And so if they feel like, oh, I'm actually okay at math, they feel more enthusiasm about coming to the classroom. So almost that reversal made an impact for me. But it does sound like she's tried to do that in allowing whatever he could offer to be enough. But then it seems like if she backs off, he lessens the intimacy, which to that case sounds more like your advice is the right advice.
I'm not saying this is the case with this caller or her situation, her boyfriend, but I have seen this with others, and I just want to send this out to others who may be in a situation where, you know, you're with somebody and they have a mental health challenge, the depression, anxiety, whatever it might be, and you tell yourself, they're not well enough for me to leave, and you stay. And they, I think, intuit it, or maybe that's explicitly stated, and then they don't have any incentive to get better if getting better means you're going to go, or you could go. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that all people with mental health challenges or crisis or diagnoses are taking hostages of their romantic partners, but I have seen it enough that I always feel like I need to flag it. That if you tell yourself, I can't go until they're well, that disincentivizes their getting well. You have to be free to go whether or not they get well. That doesn't mean you have to abandon them. It doesn't mean you have to be cruel about it or gin up a conflict that gives you an excuse to walk. It just means you have to, that can't be the only reason you stay.
I agree. And I think that, again, if you get to that place where you're like, I always go back to the golden rule, which is if that person never changed a single thing about who they are today, would you continue to stay with them? And if your answer is a very clear, very fast no, and there's no trend to showcase that things are going to be different in the near future or in the somewhat near future, then that's the decision that you should probably act on. And that's healthiest for both parties involved, because I wouldn't want to be with somebody who didn't love me, but loved an idea of me that I may or may not live up to.
I think it's really interesting what you said about your love language being touch and your partner's not a very touchy person. It sounds like you adjusted your expectations and you decided that being in a relationship with a little less physical affection than you might prefer was a price of admission that you're willing to pay to be with your partner, and you let go of whatever anger you might have about not getting enough of that, because you just like recognize that whatever else he brings to the table compensates for this deficit of physical touch. And you stop policing and counting and regulating, right? Is it possible for someone to do that in a context where what they're not getting is sex from their exclusive sexual partner?
I mean, if you can have other personal outlets that allow you to, I think also for me, a big adjustment factor too, in my expectations around physical touch is that I had a child. So my husband is very sexual, so that was never a problem, but it was more just the hugs, the check-ins, the kisses throughout the day. And so when I had a baby, I had another outlet for that physical affection. So maybe that could have also contributed to why it wasn't such a big ask for me to say, oh, I can lessen my bids to you and accept whatever you're doing. In that, I actually noticed his physical affection rise when it wasn't a constant issue every 2 weeks in our relationship. But also I just found either I was paying attention less or it just didn't bother me as much.
Oh my gosh.
But in all,
how lucky you are.
Truth.
There's a lot of women out there who are new parents who are getting so much physical touch, constant physical touch from their newborns, that they're kind of pushing their partners away, their male or female partners, because they're touched out. And you had this child, and this child brought a lot of touch into your life that kind of got your male partner off the hook from having to provide you with all of it.
Bounced out because my baby's also not very cuddly. So she takes after her dad in that way. So he's not very cuddly. She's not very cuddly. So I think somewhere in the middle, I'm like, this is sufficient. So I can imagine if I had a very touchy baby, maybe I would feel that way. But now I'm breaking even and things are going well. But I think in this particular person's case, if it's a massive part of your general well-being, I think having your love language meet should be in your top five requirements for a long-term romantic partner. And so I do think that the advice that you gave can be very freeing.
I open my questions for you with like, why won't women leave? Because often in my view, women who stay and stay and stay, she's 3 years into a relationship. The sex collapsed after 1 year. Like she's given it an extra 2 years. I think you've done your you've done your best and you're free to go, and it doesn't make you a bad person if you leave for this reason. If you leave for sex, it's a sexually exclusive relationship. If the sex ain't there, you can't justify staying. Can you take another 50 years of this? I would ask the caller.
Oh, that's an incredible question. I think women have a bad habit and sometimes a loving habit of dating the potential rather than the person.
Oh, that's so smart.
And there's something nurturing and, you know, inherently feminine and beautiful about that. But at a certain point, again, you have to ask yourself, if this person never changed and this is who they are and who they're presenting, am I comfortable with this? And it sounds like he's comfortable with where he's at. You're the one who's discomfort. So the change, call to action really comes on you.
Shan Boodram, host of Lovers and Friends, the podcast, author of The Game of Desire. Where can my listeners find you online?
You just said it. That's it, man. You knew you covered your bases. You hit that out the park.
So where are you? You're on Twitter. Everyone's on Twitter.
Yes. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. It's probably my primary platform, at Shan Booty. That's Booty with a D for my last name, not my anatomy.
Thank you so much, Shan, for coming on the show. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me. This is a joy.
For more of my conversation with Shan, subscribe to the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, which you can do at savage.love. Did you forget that one thing at the store? Do you know how annoying it is to have to go back to the store for that one thing? Now you don't have to. You can get that thing, that snack, that drink, that household essential in 30 minutes with DoorDash. DoorDash connects you with restaurants you love right now, and they bring that great food that you miss right to your door. And now you can get the grocery essentials you also need at DoorDash too. Get drinks, snacks, other household items delivered in under an hour. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with the contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the US, Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your neighborhood go-tos or choose from your favorite national chains when you order on DoorDash. And for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOVECAST. That's 25% off, up to $10 value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOVECAST. Don't forget the code LOVECAST for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply.
Hello, I am a transmasculine AFAB guy, and I am having a little bit of trouble in my sex life in that I am in a monogamous relationship and my boyfriend is strictly monogamous. However, I feel like sex is an expression of love, and I don't feel like that, for me personally, should be limited to one partner. And I'm wondering, how could I express that interest to someone who is strictly monogamous, especially in a setting where they've had past relationships end due to an interest in non-monogamy? How would you approach that situation? And, you know, obviously keeping in mind that the ultimate end goal is a healthy long-term relationship, I don't think I would break up with him no matter the result of any conversation revolving non-monogamy. But I just don't know how to express that there are people I would like to fuck that are my friends, because I feel like that would be a really enjoyable expression of love. And even in what feels like, in my mind, a fairly platonic way, just to have the sexual experience.
So it sounds like your boyfriend has been pretty clear about being monogamous, wanting a monogamous relationship, a strictly monogamous relationship. It doesn't sound like you've been similarly clear, honest, and straightforward about your preference for a non-monogamous relationship. You two may be sexually incompatible, romantically incompatible. Maybe the sex is awesome, but you would like your committed relationship to be an open one. You would like the freedom to sometimes be intimate and sexual with friends in a different way, than you are sexual with your partner. You have to be able to be honest about that. Your partner is being honest with you about who they are and what they want, or in your partner's case, requires. You have to be honest with them, with him, about what you want, even if it's not what you require. Sounds like for this person, you have been up to now, during this relationship, willing to be monogamous. You haven't been willing to risk being as honest with your partner as your partner has been with you. You're going to have to risk it. You're going to have to get honest. You can say to your partner, for you, I will make a monogamous commitment and I will honor that monogamous commitment, but you have to know that what I would prefer, and maybe we can revisit this conversation later, maybe you'll feel differently in 5 years than you do now, but you have to know that my ideal relationship would be an open one. And if knowing that, that you want an open relationship but are willing to make a monogamous commitment to him isn't enough for him, if you have to want exactly what he wants for him to feel comfortable in this relationship because he's had a few past relationships end due to an interest in non-monogamy, and I assume that interest came from his past partners, not from him, all right, it's not going to work out. It's not going to work out. And better to know now that it's not going to work out than to know 5 years, an adopted rescue dog and a co-signed lease from now, better to know it now. Some monogamous people are willing to take yes for an answer from folks who would prefer non-monogamy or open relationships. Terry, when I first met him, wanted a monogamous relationship and I did not. But for him, I was willing to be monogamous and we were monogamous for 4 years. And then things obviously changed. Maybe that's what can happen here, but our relationship wouldn't have survived. Wouldn't have been possible if when Terry said he wanted monogamy and I was like, not really what I want, but okay, for you, I'll do it. If he'd been like, not good enough, that makes me feel insecure and so no, then we wouldn't be together and we shouldn't have been together. But he was willing to take yes for an answer when he asked for monogamy from me at the beginning of our relationship. And that made our relationship, which is now a non-monogamous relationship, possible. Maybe you and your boyfriend will have the same sort of journey. Or maybe not. Because if what your boyfriend wants is to be with somebody who also wants monogamy and nothing else, or to be with someone who will lie to him and tell him that's what they want, even if it's not what they want, you two aren't going to work out. And yeah, tell him. Tell him now. Be honest about who you are, what you want, what you imagine your ideal relationship looking like in the same way he's been honest with you. You're going to have to take that risk. Okay, before we get to listener response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Sarah Barnett tweets, got my heart broken and made this TikTok, but grateful Dan Savage made a cameo in it. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. I'm so sorry you got your heart broken, Sarah. And I was happy to make that little cameo in your sad but resolute post-breakup TikTok. You're sipping from your ITMFA cup, your ITMFA mug, in your TikTok. That's my cameo. Always gonna side with the person in any romantic dispute who got themselves some Savage Love merch. So fuck that motherfucker, Sarah. You're well rid of them. Amanda K, 1983, tweets, oh Lord, at fake Dan Savage. As a scientist, I feel what you said in the intro to Savage Lovecast 799 so much. There's probably a truth to it. I assume what you're referring to, Amanda, is my point that every man I've ever met in STEM is a kinkster, a huge fucking pervert, each and every one. Now, I know, I meet a lot of perverts. Some are scientists. It doesn't follow that all scientists are perverts, but I feel confident saying that enough of them are that we're going to do real harm to science if we start firing all the perverts. And finally, Erica Gabriel tweets, I started my day with a daily devotional podcast and then the Savage Lovecast right after. This is why it's hard for me to date. I need a man who understands this balance in my life. Well, there's a man out there. There are men out there, plural, more than one. There is no the one, but there are lots of men who could be the one for you, the one you round up. And some of those men are going to understand that balance in your life, but others of them, others can be made to understand it. Okay, thanks to everyone who tweeted about this show this week or posted your other social media accounts. We really appreciate it. And if you want me to read your tweet about the Lovecast on next week's Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now your response calls.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth, and all of the listeners. This is the caller from episode 798 who had her very first orgasms from oral sex at age 35, thanks to the erotic fiction I had been reading that flipped that switch in my brain. Here it is. I had been reading a book called Sinner by the author Sierra Simone. I love everything I've read by her. Sinner in particular was the book that described the oral sex from the man's point of view in a way that just made me believe that a man wants to be down there.
Hey, Dan and the team. I'm calling in response to the caller from episode 799 whose relationship has fallen into a companionate rut. My girlfriend and I have been together for 2.5 years and living together for almost one, so I feel like our situations are similar. I definitely have a really low sex drive, and I'm really quick to, quote-unquote, forget how to have sex. A couple of things have worked for us that I think Dan missed. First, we really embrace the silliness of sex. Even if it feels goofy and we're laughing for a bit, laughing together while cuddling naked in bed really increases intimacy and makes us feel close. Second, we schedule sex when needed, like if we're having an extremely busy week or if we aren't feeling very connected. If it's on my calendar, I won't forget about it. Third, we've bought some really low-stakes adventures and taken them into the bedroom to help us move from silly to sexy. We went to our local sex shop and bought some kinky dice. We rolled the dice to determine who's the dom or sub, what clothes or costumes we're wearing, what tools to use like spanking or handcuffs. We also went out on a limb and bought a sexy activity book made by the folks who made the Adventure Challenge. We've only done one of the adventures so far. It was taking turns giving each other a lap dance while the other person was tied to a chair. And it took us from silly to sexy really quickly.
How do you teach your man to clean his ass properly? Incentive is the most compelling tool to teach stubborn people. So get in the shower. Make sure you have a handheld shower head. Wash his body, wash his ass thoroughly, rinse it, bend him over, eat his ass out, install a bidet on your toilet the next day. Explain that clean asses get eaten and dirty asses get no sex.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or a comment about some of the advice I gave on this week's show? Can you do better? Use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. We prefer voice memos and better sound quality, but we love getting your calls, your questions, your comments, however you get them to us. Seattle, San Francisco, and Portland, the Hump 2022 Opening Film Festival is headed your way. We have shows throughout this weekend in Seattle at On the Boards, San Francisco at Victoria Theater, and then I will be heading to Portland to host screenings at Revolution Hall March 3rd through 5th. Visit humpfilmfest.com to get your tickets today. Also, new merch, the Savage Store has some brand new items, including a Fuck First mug like Sarah had in her TikTok video. You can get one. Also, a hot, really nicely designed, I think, GGG mug, which is going to become my new teacup at the office. Go to savage.love to browse all the new items. All right, follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Shan Boudram on Twitter at Shan Booty. And check out her podcast, Lovers and Friends. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.